I realized this last week that in almost 15 years of preaching at Stony Brook, that's almost 15 Mother's Days, I have never once preached a Mother's Day sermon, which presents a challenge because then I decided I would preach a Mother's Day sermon. And you know, how do you preach a Mother's Day sermon? I don't have any experience in preaching Mother's Day sermons. So I was thinking this is an interesting challenge, and it seemed like there were two directions that we could go. One would be what I would call the famous mothers of the Bible direction for a Mother's Day sermon, and there are plenty of them. You know, there's Hannah, she's a nice one. There's Sarah, who is sometimes nice. There's Jezebel, who probably wasn't very nice at all. You know, so there's this really mixed sort of record on mothers of the Bible, and we could go that direction. We would probably pick a nice one, and if we did, then it's actually easy to see the direction that sermon would go. Because it's the direction that we usually go with our child dedication services. And that is in the direction of, if you're a mom, then your children ultimately belong to God. You're going to have to let go. And that is excruciatingly hard to do. And we could talk about that. And we could talk about that difficulty of motherhood. And then also how wonderful mothers are. And that would be great. And I would be preaching at mothers. That's one direction we could go. The other direction that we could go would be to start with the fifth commandment. You know the one. Honor your father and your mother as the Lord has commanded you. So Deuteronomy 5:16. Honor your father and your mother, also Exodus 20. And we could start with that. And the advantage of going that way is that I get to harangue the kids in the congregation. You know, for maybe 25 minutes, I get to just preach at the kids. And so that's the direction we're going to go. Because I don't do this. I don't get to do this very often. And this nicely turns the tables. Because normally, I'll tell you what kids get to do here. The ones that stay in the sermon. What they get to do is tune out. Completely tune out. You know, and you know, a few minutes into the sermon, they're deciding they're going to think about something else. And this time, what we can do is say, kids, I'm going to make you pay attention. Sam, that's you. No. Elijah, I'm going to make you pay attention. Grace, okay. Andrew, you too. And the adults, you can tune out, right? I mean, you can, if you want, you can pull out your smartphones. You know, you can play solitaire on them. Did you bring P.G. Wodehouse with you today? Oh, too bad, because Jim has dreamed of reading P.G. Wodehouse during a sermon and seeing if he could get away with it. So he could have done that if he'd been forewarned, you know. So, you know, just think about what you play. You can play hangman on your bulletins if you want, you know, but this is for the kids, you know. So you can just tune out, but try to be subtle about it, because you know how embarrassed your kids get if they think that, you know, you're getting distracted during a sermon. Okay. So if we're going to go this direction, honor your father and your mother, and we start with Deuteronomy 5:14, the second command, you know, which is, you know, and the fifth command, sorry. First question we can ask, what does it mean? This is a question for the kids. What does it mean? What do you actually have to do if you're going to obey this fifth command? I mean, it's one of only 10, right? But it's to you and to all of us. But, you know, to you for right now, how do you actually obey the command to honor your father and your mother? And you can focus on mothers if you want, in honor of Mother's Day. What's your answer? And if none of you volunteer, I'm going to volunteer you. No. Sam? What about you? I mean, how do you apply this, right? What are you actually going to do to honor your mother? Obey her. Wow, that's really good, actually, because that's exactly right. I mean, right? I mean, so this is the obvious way to honor your mother and your father is to obey them. And, you know, does anybody disagree with this? Any of your kids? Bailey, agree or disagree? You agree, all right? Your mom's right next to you, right? Yeah. Elijah, agree or disagree? You have some space between you and your dad, right? So, agree or disagree? You agree, okay. So they all agree, right? They all agree that to honor means to obey. And so we can imagine, right? It's very easy to imagine how this plays out. So Bailey's mom says to her, Bailey, clean your room. And Bailey says, yes, mom. And does it, right? I mean, that's what it means, right? She just obeys. And, you know, so Noah's mom says, Noah, Noah cooks supper for us tonight. You know, so Noah does it, right? I mean, that's the sort of thing it does. You know, you just obey. You do, and it's really simple. What obedience means to a kid is just really simple. Doesn't happen very often, or not in the way we want, because, you know, you don't obey, or you complain, or that sort of thing. So then we have to ask a second question, and that is, why should you do this? Okay? I mean, sure, the command is there. Honor your father and your mother. You say the command means obey. Why should you actually do this? Any answers to that? No answers? We had an older child answer over here. What did he say? He said, because it's right?
Because it's right.
Because it's right. Okay, well, that's great. Because it's right. But, you know, is there any reason beyond just it's right? It's the thing to do, right? Is there anything that would make you say, you know, this is a good thing to do. I should want to do this. Bailey? Okay, so your parents might know better than you do. You know, they've lived longer. You know, they might know things that you need to know, right? Which is actually a really good answer, right? And go ahead. Okay, because it models obedience to God. Any other answers for why you should do this? Deuteronomy 5:16. Honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. This is, and Ephesians 6, 1-3, will reinforce this. This is the only one of the Ten Commandments that has a promise attached. That says, obey, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. So this is the command, and Paul will say this in Ephesians chapter 6, this is the command with the promise, right? This is the only command with the promise that it will go well with you and that you will live long. And there's some ways that the application to this is obvious, right? That, you know, you actually have a much better chance of survival, Sam, right? Think about when you were smaller, right? And you're beside the road, and you're about to run out into it, and there's a car coming, and your dad says, Sam, stop! And of course you obey him, right? Well, maybe, or he grabs you, but you have survived until this point because of obedience for some reasons, right? I mean, there are certain ways in which obeying your parents will help you statistically to survive longer, right? Because, especially when you're small. So there's an obvious way. This also might be seen as an application of that oldest of mother's warnings, right? You know the oldest of mother's warnings? I brought you into the world and I can take you out of the world. You know, so you'll survive longer, right? So it could be that, but the problem is, how much does this really mean to you kids? I mean, if I say, you obey your parents, you'll live long. Does that really matter to you? Does it? I mean, let me put it this way, okay? And it would be more helpful if we had some of the teenagers in the congregation, but I know exactly what happened. They probably had some premonition that I was gonna harangue kids, and so they stayed away, right? So, but I could say to them, okay, you know, you're gonna, if you honor your mother and your father, then you might get to live as long as Mr. Brown. You know, you can live into your 80s. And they look at Mr. Brown and they say, and if they're honest, I don't care if I live that long, because teenagers don't think that way. Kids don't think that way. You know, do you really want to be like Mr. Brown, who's having trouble with his knees and his eyes and this kind of thing? And I say, no, I don't want to be like that. And so how on earth is this an incentive, you know, to live long? Kids do not think in this way. And so this isn't a promise to individual kids to say, you do this, you'll have this wonderful long life. It just kind of falls flat. And so then we ask, well, what is the point of this promise? Let me read it again, and especially kids, listen to it and tell me, what is the point of this promise, if you can hear it? Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Why is God making this promise? Any ideas? Yes, in the back.
Because maybe you'll want to
Okay, yeah, so he wants to motivate children to obey your parents more, but you know, why this particular promise? How is it supposed to motivate you? Does anybody have any idea? It'll go well with you, yeah? Okay, we'll translate that into language we can understand, Vicki. What does it mean that it's a societal thing?
God's a God of order, and if the parents are in authority and have rebellion against authority, pretty soon everything breaks down.
Okay, so a societal thing means this promise isn't just for individuals. In fact, you can see that it doesn't work for individuals because you might be a really obedient kid and you might have a short life. Right? There have been lots of obedient kids who've had short lives. Right? So it is not a promise to individuals. It's a promise to a nation, the nation of Israel here, right, in the Ten Commandments. And then it's broadened out to be a promise to societies and to the church. And that promise means it's for all of us to think about, how this works and what the promise means. And the promise seems to be saying, right, if you are the kind of society, if you're the kind of people, the kind of church, the kind of country where children honor their father and their mother throughout their lives, then you will be the kind of society, the kind of country, the kind of church that will live long in the land and where things will go well for you. That's the promise, and that puts a really interesting spin on Mother's Day. Because Mother's Day ends up not being about you and your mom, it ends up being about what kind of a pattern of life you will affirm by affirming your relationship with your mom. Your relationship with your mom is part of this bigger pattern, and when you honor that pattern that God has put in place. And then we can pause and ask, does it work, right? Is it really true? And let's examine it in two ways. And the first is with a little experiment. And this experiment involves, kids, you've already tuned out because I've been talking too much, but here's the experiment. All of the parents here, all of the adults, disappear. It is just you. It is just you, so Elijah, Bailey, Sam, Grace, all the rest of you as well, and you are alone, and you're on this island, right? And it is a tropical island so that there's food available for you, right? It's growing on trees. You might have to figure out how to get it down from the trees. But it's this nice tropical island. You are there. There are no adults, right? Okay, but we will extend it a little bit, and we will pretend that maybe, you know, Lily and Maggie were here today, so they're there too. In fact, we'll even put Emma Hartley, not Emma Kuypers, Emma's a little bit too old, right? Emma Hartley in there too. So we have this whole group, everybody under 18 in the congregation is on this island and all the adults are gone. What is life going to be like for you there? What's gonna happen? Imagine it. Noah, what do you think will happen? Okay. Okay, we immediately have a king, okay? Elijah, what do you think will happen? Will Noah take charge? Why not? Why won't Noah take charge? Because, okay, well, good. We already have a little civil war going on, okay? Right away. Okay, we have this civil war going on. And we can imagine actually one way that this might go. And if it went this way, then we could write a book about it, and we could give it a great title like Lord of the Flies, and we could make every teenager in the world read it, and we would make lots of money, right? And the way that would go is, you know, you could imagine they would really mess things up, and they would do things really badly, and they would start, you know, hurting each other and fighting all the time. But you know what? When I imagine it, I honestly don't think that would happen. Here's what I think would happen. I think, actually, Noah and Elijah, probably Lily and Maggie, and, well, Emma less so, she'd be off with animals somewhere, but they would start to take charge, and they would say, you know, actually, if we're going to survive, we have to work together, and if we are going to survive, we're going to have to take care of each other, and they would start searching around for food, And Lily, being a vegetarian, would start to learn how to grow food, right? I mean, she'd have to figure this out. And they would try to work together to create some shelter for themselves, and we would have this wonderful Robinson Crusoe or Swiss Family Robinson story. And yes, some of them might die, but they would be really sad about that. And they would, in the end, I think, try to create something that worked, that helped them to survive. I am actually quite convinced that that is what would happen if we really did this. Now, it didn't happen in Lord of the Flies, but that was because that was British kids who went to boarding school, and boarding schools ruin everybody. But our kids, they would be different if they did this. And if we play that out, if you think this is possibly what would happen if we put our kids on this island, that they would at least try to survive in some sort of civilized way, then you would have to ask the question, what enabled them to do this, right? What is it that caused them to have the skills, to have the desire, to have the motives to try to do this? Now, where did it all come from? And then it would be pretty obvious, actually, where it all came from. They, from very early on in their lives, from before they could talk, were watching parents and learning from them. They learned language from them, which enabled them to communicate with one another. But along with language, they learned all sorts of other social skills to be able to communicate with one another. They learned from observation and from teaching how to treat people in a civilized sort of a way. Ways, things that we do not even think about, they learned. Question in the back. No, there aren't any parents on this island, but what I'm saying, good objection, what I'm saying is that you bring things with you that you've already learned from your parents. And even, right, the smallest, although let's accept Joelle and Allison, right? I mean, maybe they haven't learned all that much yet, but you know what would happen? Is Bailey would be teaching them things that her mom has taught her, right? Because she got them from her mom. And collectively, you put all of this stuff together that's being passed on this desert island, even though the parents are left behind, and what do we call it? We call it wisdom. A whole complex of stuff, morality, ways of doing things, ways of using tools, all these sorts of things come together. And kids, just because they've been in families, will have these things. Okay, so that's my theory, okay? What is the source of all of this stuff? Where does it all come from? Is there a biblical answer to the way we've been going? Turn to the book of Proverbs. And I need some help here. No, you need a Bible. Sam, do you have a Bible? Grab one for your mom, okay? Andrew, do you have a Bible? Oh, I can give you one. Here you go, Andrew. Anybody else that's a kid that needs a Bible here? Okay, because I'm going to make you look up some passages in Scripture. Do you know where to find the book of Proverbs? Book of Proverbs, okay? You look more or less in the middle of the Bible. Psalms is sort of in the middle. Proverbs comes right after it. I'm going to ask you to look up some verses in the book of Proverbs, and I'm going to ask some of you kids to read some of these verses, right? And I see Daniel back there. Were you not there before, Daniel, or did I just not notice you? I didn't notice you. Oh, okay. Well, good. You're here. So I'm going to make you read some of these verses too, okay? So, in fact, you can start since you're in the back. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 20 and 21. Look it up, and I'll ask you to read it in a minute, okay? Bailey, could you read Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1? Just in a minute, okay? And let's see, Elijah. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 20, and Noah. Proverbs chapter 23, verses 22 to 25. Okay? So let's start with Proverbs chapter 6, verse 20. Daniel, why don't you stand up and read it so you can be loud.
My son, heed your father's command and do not forsake your mother's teaching.
Okay, and 21 too. Go ahead. Okay, so my son, keep your father's commands and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Bind them upon your heart forever, fasten them on your neck. That sort of is just a direct application of the fifth commandment, right? It's pretty obvious. So this is one way of applying the fifth commandment, is that you pay attention to your father and your mother is teaching you. Bind them around your neck. They're always with you. Okay, the next verse. Chapter 10, verse 1. Who did I give that to? Bailey. Why don't you stand up so you can read it loudly?
A wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son grief to his mother.
Okay, thank you. And this takes it one step further, right? It takes it to not only, you know, should you do this, right? You should bind these things around your neck, your father's and your mother's teaching. But if you don't, your mother is going to be really sad, right? And, you know, your father is going to be joyful if you do this, and your mother's going to be really sad if you don't. Well, in fact, they'll both be sad. But mothers can be especially sad about this, right? And we can see it's true. One of the things about mothers that you can see is when their kids make bad decisions, it makes them really sad, and that happens all their lives through. It never stops, okay? So then let's go to the next one. It's Proverbs chapter 15, verse 20. Who had that one? Elijah. Okay, same point. Wise son brings joy to his father. You know, foolish son or daughter, by the way, you can apply that equally, is going to bring grief. Okay, the next one. What was the next one? That was Proverbs 23, right? I think it was Proverbs 23, verse 22. Yeah. Okay, same theme, obviously, right? Mothers of wise children, happy. Mothers of foolish children, sad, right? But by this time, we've started to see this really fascinating link in the book of Proverbs. And this is how it works, okay? On one side, you have the sad moms, right? And the sad moms have foolish sons. And the foolish sons, their lives are falling apart because they're doing foolish things, right? And on the other side, you have the happy moms. And the happy moms have children who are wise, who make good decisions, and they are happy because their children are making good decisions. And what you have is this really strong link between honoring of father and mother and wisdom, and dishonoring of father and mother and foolishness. Right? And foolishness is something that will destroy people and societies, and wisdom is something that makes societies and civilizations work and makes them thrive, right? And so if wisdom is valued, then the church or the country or the nation that you're in will be more likely to thrive. It will go well with you, and you will live long in the land. And if the teaching of father and mother is despised and rejected, then things will fall apart. Is it true that this will happen? Well, we have some really compelling historical examples pretty recently in history of societies which have tried to break the link between mothers and children, mothers and fathers and children. Take, for example, the Cultural Revolution in China. The Cultural Revolution in China was this movement initiated by Mao Zedong, basically trying to say to the younger generation, that older generation, you can just get rid of them and dismiss them. You're in charge now. You're the one, you know, you do what you want to do. And you can despise them as much as you want. You can put them in prison. You can kill them. Because, you know, you're the ones who are the vanguard of the revolution now. And so he broke the link, and millions of people died as a result of that. And Chinese society was thrown into depths of sort of disintegration that it has never seen before in history. It was an absolute disaster. We could take Stalinist Russia, where something similar happened in some ways. We could take the child soldiers in Africa. What is it that these terrible military leaders do with child soldiers in order to train them? They get them to do dastardly things to their parents, right? To kill their parents, to maim their parents, in order to break those ties so that they have control over them, and the society disintegrates and falls apart. We have compelling examples of what happens when honoring of father and mother is broken down, when those links are broken down. So how are we doing? As a society, first of all, how are we doing on this? And you might say, well, you know, not so bad. We celebrate Mother's Day, right? And Father's Day, you know, and that's good. But think about our institutions. This is actually challenging. Think about the college across the street. What is happening in that college in relation to children and parents? And that is replicated in colleges all over the place. There is, in some ways, a systematic attitude of separating children from their parents and almost encouraging them to despise them except for when they send money to the college. And then the college is happy to receive the money, but the college doesn't want the input at all. And I have three kids who have been in college recently. I know this, right? I know that colleges actually despise the parents except that they give them the money. And our high schools, you know, or our schools generally, right? Well, of course they need parents to do the volunteer things, but do they really want them in the hallways? No, they don't want them in the hallways. There is, in many of our institutions in our society, there is a breaking down or a movement towards the breaking down of that bond of honoring of parents that is the absolute glue and fabric that holds societies together and that allows civilizations to thrive. And it's something that we desperately have to fight against. We desperately have to recognize what's happening. And if the church doesn't do that, then who will? Right? If the church is not at the front and center of saying this relationship of parents to children, the passing on of wisdom is what keeps society and civilization together, and we have to guard it and treasure it and protect it in every way we can, then who's going to do it? So the church has a responsibility, and that gives meaning to Mother's Day. And it gives meaning to it well beyond your relationship with your mother. Because your relationship with your mother might have been a difficult one, or your mother might have passed on and you might be in grief over that. But you, by honoring that relationship and by honoring this principle that God has put in place, the pattern that God has put in place, you honor God and you give a gift to civilization. You give a gift to the society around you. Here's a picture of what you're doing. You are laying a sandbag in the levee, which is holding back the floodwaters of this tide, which would destroy our culture and our civilization, which is centered on the relationship within families. One other thing to say. When we celebrate Mother's Day, remember that motherhood in Scripture is never separated from fatherhood. They're always together. Always together. And so what you're affirming biblically when you affirm motherhood is not some sort of an isolated, nice, cozy relationship between mother and daughter or mother and son. It is family. It is mother and father passing on the wisdom of generations to children in order that things might go well for you in the land. I had a closing hymn chosen for this sermon, and it turned out to be a serious lapse of judgment. The closing hymn that I'd chosen was "Precious Lord, Take My Hand," which, if you remember, in that hymn it has these words, "I am tired, I am weak, I am worn." And that might be applicable to a lot of moms here, but I decided we shouldn't make a point of it. So we're changing the closing hymn. If you would please stand with me, and we will sing hymn number 535.